You're listening to episode 326 of Women Worldwide. Have you been through a transformation? Is it possible to go from the depths of calamity to the heights of restoration? I've got a guest today who has a lot to share on this topic, so stay tuned to learn more. Hi, I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. I've spent an entire career helping women to share stories, nurture relationships, grow their brands, but most of all, to find their voices so they can make a difference. Do you feel stuck? Do you want to power up your own voice? Women Worldwide features the stories of passionate women who have navigated big career challenges and some of the toughest changes. These professionals offer deep insights and advice to inspire you and to help you uncover what's holding you back. Let Women Worldwide ignite your passion so you can excel in life. Everyone, welcome to another episode of Women Worldwide. Thank you so much for showing up, for tuning in, and for being here today, and for always sharing the shows of our guests who have amazing, inspiring stories, and also sharing how you're doing and feeling. Well, this is a new week. We have a new guest with another really incredible journey. So let's get right to today's topic. Today's topic is restoration and transformation. My guest is the author of a new book, and she's going to share what it means to go from the depths of calamity to the heights of restoration. Joining me on the show is Molly Wisegram, and Molly is the author of a new book. It's a memoir, The Other Side of Us, a memoir about trauma, truth, and transformation. And Molly has studied, she has several degrees in English, psychology. She has a master's in communication study from the University of South Dakota. And she also studied with the Center for Spiritual Living and graduated from their program, which is the Spiritual Practitioners Program. And she did this in 2017. There's a lot that I could share about Molly, but I think it's really important that she joins the conversation. Molly, welcome. Welcome to Women Worldwide.
Thank you so much. I'm just thrilled to be here.
Well, it's great to have you here, and congratulations on your new book. It's really exciting.
It is. Thank you.
And I guess that first question is, Molly, did you ever think you were going to write a memoir?
Absolutely not. I am not that interesting of a person to feel that I had a lot of a story to share that people would want to read, but life takes a turn and interesting things happen sometimes. So here we are.
Yes. I mean, life does take its twists and turns. I mentioned in the introduction about the family, and that is your family that's faced a traumatic health crisis. So can you talk a little bit about your book and what do you really want readers to know?
Sure. The truth of it is, after the experience that I, our family went through, I had to get it out. I had to write it. It was the purpose for me initially and continues to be, it was a real processing of trauma. That's what it was. It was a capturing of what happened so I could kind of start to figure it out, because trauma's not sensical. But I also have four little children, and I wanted, and they went through this experience along with us. While I didn't feel like I had a ton of control during it, children have less control. So I wanted them to have an opportunity someday when they're older to get to see our experience through adult eyes. And I wanted it to be framed as a story of resilience, because that's what you do in struggle. You kind of have to be resilient. So it was a very important process for me going forward from that. It's been, I've put this together, and, I guess I'll offer it. It's an offering. If the right people will come to it. It's been very interesting for me to hear the response, from folks, because we all go through stuff in life. I mean, it's not, most people won't have Guillain-Barré syndrome because it's such a rare illness, but,
what is the name of the illness?
So the It's called Guillain-Barré syndrome. So in 2019, okay. on Valentine's Day, my husband was diagnosed with this rare disease. It's Guillain-Barré syndrome affects about maybe 100,000 in the world per year. And it's just fluke. I mean, it's often, mm-hmm. if your body might just get a simple virus or bacteria, I mean, nothing that it hasn't fought before. And the body kind of gets confused. It's like an autoimmune effect where instead of going after the little bug that you have, it goes after your own nervous system. So we were in a part of our life where we were really kind of working and acclimating still to kind of having our fourth child. She was just 8 months at the time, just because life is crazy with the family. And, you know, so we were going through that. Yeah. To all of a sudden, my husband is like, it's so weird. My hands and my feet are tingling. And enough where he actually made his own doctor's appointment. I didn't badger at all. To a week later, he's on a ventilator and completely paralyzed. And we don't know what's going to happen. And in fact, Guillain-Barré syndrome has, you know, as most things do, varying range of severity. Sure. Well, at the point in time where we realize his case isn't the quick, you know, Wikipedia 2 to 4 week kind of decline. His was so severe that quite literally he lost all function, even to the point where he couldn't blink his eyes. They stay open. It's creepy that they contract to the point where they just are wide open. And the doctor just said, you know, there's a process of this disease, but when it's a severe case like this, the plateau, basically where people go decline, or the decline and then the mm-hmm. plateau before you end up going, you know, starting to have some recovery or muscle activation, it's just an unknown time. It could be months, it could be years, you know. And we're kind of sitting there going, what?
So, life was so different a month ago.
Yeah, it was a different, like 2 days ago. You know, it's just, it's right. It was a really, that moment of truth kind of thing of like, oh my gosh, this isn't how I saw this all working out. And he ended up, I mean, Guillain-Barré syndrome is one of those things where it's not a great diagnosis, right? But people come back from this. It's not unheard of. You might not have the same function, mm-hmm. but, you know, and the thing for us that we kind of get most scared about is like, and by the way, it looks so bad that you just can't imagine that it will ever get better. I mean, it is, but some of the things people don't get back are their hands, or, you know, they might not walk. They might be in a wheelchair. So you just don't know. You're just, you're living literally in the moment and just having to take one step at a time.
I can't even imagine how you get from where you were to what I said in the introduction before our discussion. This place of, I mean, I know that the memoir is trauma, truth, and transformation. Was it that you sat with your truth, you accepted the truth, and just knew that you had to find a path? What were those steps? What was going on in your mind?
Well, the trauma is out there, mm-hmm. and you suddenly are faced with, how do you act in this? You know, we don't know if it's going to be months or years or what's going to happen. How do we do this? And I think, so you take one step at a time, like I said, but I think the thing you start to realize, well, it's hard and horrible, and you start to learn about yourself. You start to learn about, like, okay, how do I just felt like I was almost watching myself go through this.
And body experience.
I mean, it's like, okay. And things I learned of, like, you kind of have to, for me anyway, I own this, like, I kind of had to separate from my emotions. I got into control. I mean, I understood what it means to be a good healthcare advocate. That mm-hmm. became very personal to me. Handling the details that I had to handle, I had to separate from my feelings at that time.
Sure.
But the thing is, what I think the point is, like, you learn so much about yourself, and then you start to see the ways that community, what community means, what family means, how we all are so intimately interconnected. And, you know, it's just, and then as you know, the amazing thing is my husband, so essentially what happened is my husband was ventilated for 15 weeks.
Oh, goodness.
We ended up, there was kind of three phases, literally to the healthcare facility and, mm-hmm. and the type of recovery he had. So the first segment of it, before he was then transferred on to a rehab hospital in Nebraska called the Madonna Rehab Hospital. Basically, he was just at the very bottom. And if you're in for 15 weeks, you can't breathe. But then you start to see some increase. And my husband was flown to a tertiary care hospital 3 hours away from our home. So our kids stayed behind. They're with my mom and dad, which
they didn't see their dad for a while.
I try to keep them away, to be honest with you, because in my mind, it was like, in my mind, it was like, let's wait till it's not so bad. So I can save them from that.
Sure. Because that visual image, that doesn't go away.
I was really afraid of that for them. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know how to handle it. I didn't want them to have to handle it.
Sure.
But it was when the doctor said, I don't know how long this will be. I mean, we can't tell you that. And it's going to be longer than you want it to be. And that's when I realized, like, I can't keep my kids out of this. I can give them options. Like, hey, come. We need you. I need you here. Daddy needs mm-hmm. you here. And if you're not ready to see him, everybody understands that. Just, you know. You're not.
How old were your children? I know you mentioned eight months was the youngest.
Yep. 8 months. I think it was 3, 6, and 8.
Oh, so yeah. Old.
They are so little. And, you don't know how, as a mom, to what, how, like, I wanted to protect my kids by keeping them out of it. But I learned so much about my kids as this went on in terms of, you know, how information really is empowering for everyone. I mean, you make you feel much more in control, and that's not any different for children. I got kind of the shape of a finger from my 8-year-old saying you should have called home more, and you know. But here's the thing: I learned so much about them. I was so respected that. But we did a lot of counseling together. We did all of these things because it's so important to. Well, I said I kind of separated from my emotions. Mm-hmm. I am also someone who really understands I don't know how feelings or emotions are so critical in our life. So absolutely. While I could only handle so many at a time,
you
I wanted
become
to
become the observer of the emotions.
Yes. Yeah. You do. You take in as much mm-hmm. as you can so you don't get like crippled to the fact that you can't move anymore because it's just too much. It's overwhelming. Right. But I wanted my kids to kind of learn about their emotions as we were going through this. And I think counseling was an amazing opportunity. And hopefully, you know, you don't unlearn some of those lessons. And I bet they'll draw on that again in their life sometime.
Absolutely. Was the, you know, I had mentioned the Centers for Spiritual Living. Mm-hmm. Was when you graduated from their practitioner's program, mm-hmm. was that before what happened to your husband?
Yeah.
Interesting. So did that
it's
help
incredible.
You? The spiritual studies?
Majorly, yeah. In fact, my husband and I went on this journey first together before I went on and did kind of more of a, the program that I went through, the 2-year program that I went through. But yeah, we had actually taken courses together, and it had become such a way of thinking. I mean, this idea that, you know, our thoughts are things, mm-hmm. they really matter. They kind of create our reality.
Right.
Kind of this idea of, you know, maybe non-duality and that there's not a good and a bad. I mean, I'm looking at a note right now on I have a little post-it note, and I think this came on before Chris was sick, but it says, just watch what happens. It's good. It's this idea that no matter what's going to happen, just wait, because it'll be right somehow. It'll kind of make sense.
Everything is always working out, and what we feed ourselves in terms of our thoughts really do create the reality in front, and everything that we see now was based on all of our thoughts of the past.
That's it. That's it. And I'm so thankful that my husband and I have had this together. So here's one of the first things I said to him after his diagnosis. I put my hands on his shoulders and I said, Chris, this is going to be the best thing that ever happened to us. And it wasn't unusual for us to say stuff like that, because we had gone through this practice of, I don't know, thinking that way, I guess, framing things and trying, you know, like anticipating that there's something good to be learned and to be
something
known
on the other side.
On the other side.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Really good title.
Thank you.
That's powerful. Tell me how your husband is today.
Well, he is incredible. It took 9 months. So he was away from home, essentially 7 hours away from home for the majority of his time healing, because he was in an inpatient rehab facilities. He came home in basically November of 2019, right before the pandemic. So we had a lot of home time together that next year, which, you know, we appreciated, because we didn't have that the whole year of 2019.
You lost a lot of time in a sense. I mean, were there, but it was different.
We lived two entirely different lives. Him literally just trying, and he calls himself like a startup company. Like, he had to kind of go, okay, I am starting from the ground up. He'd joke about racing for physical development of our daughter. Like, he's like, he was proud he got potty training done first, but I mean, it was literally starting over. So we got through the pandemic. And I was really nervous about that. Cause what kind of preconceived, how does he fall into those risk categories? But he literally 2 weeks ago ran a half marathon.
Congratulations. That's amazing.
He's doing what he's calling the victory lap this summer. And he's working on an Olympic style triathlon in Omaha this summer. But it is. And
here's the height of restoration right there.
Exactly. And he's not perfect. I mean, he doesn't have, he said his hands feel like if you're in the bath for way too long, like they're always that weird feeling. He doesn't have maybe all that, the same stability in his ankles, and he doesn't feel up to his knees probably the same way, but he can run a half marathon, something he wouldn't have done before. He's obviously, we're so thankful. We are so thankful.
It's just amazing, your journey. Were there any, of course there were incredibly stressful moments that you've had to deal with. How did you deal with stress during these times? What did you do to feel better?
You know, I kind of took on this sense of, I wanted to control things I'm not saying that was necessarily always the healthiest, but it was not an unhealthy thing. I took on and controlled the things I could. So I got those bills taken care of. I figured out how we were going to get everybody everywhere. I figured out how we were going to, I was anticipating having to change our life and our home and things to try to accommodate wheelchairs. I just controlled. And I think
knowledge really helped you. Hands-on. I mean, even though at times you said you were watching and observing the emotions, there were still actions that you could take that made you feel better.
I wanted to know, you're right on with that information. I wanted to know everything. I wanted to understand the different possibilities. I didn't want it sugar-coated. I needed to know, because those are what allowed me to ask really good questions. Because if I didn't have that information to those questions, I wouldn't be able to anticipate. I always just wanted to be the can-do person. We've got this. And I wanted to understand those routes so that we could do that gracefully. I will say that, that stress does get to you. I mean, but counseling was a huge thing. And I would, for me, I'm just such an advocate of that profession, because for me, I was able to start to untangle some of the things that were just, really traumatic and echoing. And, you start to behave in a way to try to, address things that maybe not exactly in your, to me, it just helped me put it on the table to sort through like what makes sense. Is this reaction, for instance, I felt anger a lot of times, like it would be sort of what would spur me on to keep going, even though I was exhausted. Well, that's fine. And there's a point where you have to understand like, okay, this is no longer serving you. And while that is how you are reacting, like this is going to be a process. Again, knowledge for me was really important. Maybe as I said, I observed myself and maybe not always doing the most, you know, I wouldn't act angry at people, but I would fire up if I got frustrated or I got protective of the kids. I'd fire up and I'd start asking my next questions. But I think that creating that pathway with counseling to understand myself, allow and accept maybe how I was feeling, what was going on, to honestly then propel me into kind of my next phase, because you continue to recover. We have amazing ending of that segment of our life in terms of that, his outcome, and you continue to recover.
So restoration just keeps going.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's a great way to look at it. It just sounds so much, you were tuned in, just very much tuned in to even if you were angry or stressed, or maybe there were moments of incredible hope, whatever it was, it sounds like you were tuned in, you wanted the knowledge. And how important for your children to also see you functioning and being who you are and dealing with what you were dealing with. You're a great role model, inspiration to them and inspiration to so many.
Yeah, I think our kids, I think we all worked off of one another like that. And what I learned at home was that while they're children, they're part of this. So I would huddle and we'd be like, okay, here's where we're at. Here's what we're going to do. Here's what we need to do. Here's where it could be hard. Can I get your help? And by creating that ally, you know, within
the huddle,
I don't do it as well now when we're all back together the way we are, but I hope that they understand what they're capable of because they were inspiration to me.
Oh, it works both ways. Whenever I hear the word huddle from this point forward, I will think of you, even if it's in reference to a football game. I will think of you.
Felt like a football
children.
Game. Yeah.
Just a beautiful story. And I can't even believe it, but we're nearing the end of our discussion. I just want to ask you, even though you have sprinkled in advice throughout this entire conversation, is there any parting advice that you want to share with the Women Worldwide audience about trauma, truth, and restoration?
I think it could sum it down to one word, and that's just trust. I feel like stuff doesn't make sense a lot, but just watch what happens. It's good. It's this idea that we aren't ever going to be able to control everything or know every outcome. But when we put that frame around it of trust that we are held somehow, that there's some good that will come out of this. But however, I think that's the best we can do. Trust is an amazing thing. And it's a big effort, but.
Well, I think that is a powerful word, trust. And yes, trust the universe. It's going to work out. Really, really great advice. Well, last question, super easy. Where can people find out more about you and your memoir?
Sure. I think the best place is my website, mollywisegram.com. My last name is spelled Weisgram. So, yep, mollywisegram.com.
All right. Well, I hope everybody finds you on your website. And Molly, thank you so much for sharing your journey, talking about your book, and really showing how you navigated from trauma to truth to transformation. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your questions and allowing me this time. And I've really enjoyed it.
Oh, well, thank you again. And thank you to all of you for tuning into Women Worldwide. And as I always say, please keep the conversations going and the feedback coming. And you always know where to find me. And that's right. You can email me, Deirdre@pureperformancecom.com. Okay, friends, until our next episode, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.